Oh, it's not shakes. It says shares.
Shake her link.
Shake a link. Can we make that a thing?
Can we create new lingo?
Hey, shake a link all over the nerdappropriate.com.
Alright, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 238, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
So this week on the show, we're going to review the new indie title Inside that came to Xbox One. Ash is going to talk about the TV show Brain Dead. Then we have some news about what's going on with Xbox sales and games with gold, and then some competitive gaming news. And then in our question of the week, we ask you what is currently on your game pile of shame, which is very appropriate since we are right in the middle of all of the sales that tend to happen over the summertime.
Which just adds to the shame.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Sweet. This episode's brought to you by Loot Crate, and July's theme is futuristic. This month, blast off into the future with exclusive items from Rick and Morty, a really good show that I caught on to super late, Futurama, Mega Man, Star Trek TNG, and Valiant Comics. If you're looking to get a surprise box of goodies delivered from the future, go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA for 10% off your purchase. You help out the show, and you get a little box of goodness in the mail every month, and we appreciate it. So thank you to Loot Crate, and thank you to you guys for supporting us.
Thank you.
This long.
Hooray.
You guys watch Rick and Morty off the top real quick?
No,
I don't.
It's very enjoyable. If you like sort of the many timelines episode of Community, I would recommend watching Rick and Morty.
Where do I find this show?
It's on Hulu now, I think, because it's part of Adult Swim, I think.
Excellent.
So you can catch all the episodes there, I believe. But that's cool. It's super super fun and kind of weird and out there.
That's awesome.
So hey guys, it's been a little while. I haven't been on in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
What have you been doing?
Oh, I was gonna ask one of you. I was gonna pick, but I'll go.
Well, you haven't been around, so you can go first. You haven't been around for a while.
I've done nothing.
That's not true.
I was thinking about this today that I feel like I have like the least legitimately. I don't know if legitimately is the right word. I have the least logically busy schedule of the three of us. Like you both have babbies and things to do all day, and I kind of just like have work. I don't really have anything else.
Okay. Sounds so sad. Like
I have nothing in my life.
There's nothing else.
I have a fat cat who requires very little attention and that's it. I don't have like a day to day obligation other than work, I guess is what I should say. Mm-hmm. But I've had like a weirdly super crazy schedule for like 3 or 4 weeks, and I don't know why.
People visiting. You had guests. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I've never even been on to talk about Dub Dubs, have I? It was boring. Nothing happened.
Oh, okay.
I was on once. Anyways, we talked about E3. It was cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, what have I been doing? I did my second improv show. That was fun.
There you go. Nice, man. Are you nervous at all when you do it anymore? Or is it like...
It's like a different... It's like a different kind of nerves.
Anxious fun? Good.
Yeah, it's like the uncontrollable nerves. It's not like I don't get like logically nervous in my head where I'm like, okay, I'm nervous because of X, Y, and Z. It's just like all of a sudden I'll kind of feel like I have to shit and I don't want to eat anything. And I'm like... Oh, this is my body, like fight or flight taking over before my logic brain can be like, hey, you're fine. No one's going to murder you at an improv show.
Yeah.
So it's good. I did the weird thing that I do on occasion where when I get on stage, I no longer know what human hands do. Like you become like ultra aware of some part of your body, and mine always is my hands for some reason. And I just kind of was like, which kind of makes me just put them down at my side. And then I like weirdly don't move my arms at all. And you're like, well, like what's that no arm guy doing? And I'm just like, hello. What do you do with your hands? Like, I don't, I just didn't really have much, but it was fun. We got some good laughs, which was new.
And that's
was
awesome.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you like hold, can you like hold the mic stand or a mic or like a bottle of water or something? There's Oh, there's nothing. No,
there's nothing. Man. You're supposed to do like object work is what they call it. You know, like miming, doing things with stuff.
Shit. So they just throw you out there like literally with nothing.
Yeah, and this time was different. So the first time we played like games, you know, like you would see on what's that improv show?
Whose Line?
Yeah, on Whose Line Is It Anyway? They play like, it's called short form, so it's all games, like of different sorts.
Right.
And we did that for my first class, and this one was just what's called long form, where you just do scenes, essentially. So like we got a suggestion, which was bowls, I believe, if I remember. And then people just walk out and you just make shit up. That's it.
Oh man,
there's
that's
like
so scary.
Zero other things to it.
That's crazy.
It's not scary. It's fun. Everybody should do it. It's like, it kind of makes you approach everything differently. Just period. Which I've talked about before on the show.
Yeah. But
it's good. Everybody should do it. It's fun times.
Cool.
So I did that. I've been thinking about doing open mics, so I went to a couple open mics, and they were the worst things I've ever experienced.
To be clear, you're talking about stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comedy, yes. Yeah, open mics.
Yes.
Oh, because music and stuff. Yeah, yeah, right. Stand-up open mics. They were really... I invite you to look at my Twitter if you really want to know what happened inside of them, because I'm not going to mention the jokes that happened, but they were something else.
They were really terrible, so everyone should follow at Matt History and take a look at some of the jokes he had to experience at open mic night.
The only one I'll mention, which is sort of sad, but also was the most confusing, was one guy got up and did, it was 3 minutes each, right?
Yeah.
And he did literally 3 minutes about being homeless, right?
Wow.
And it wasn't about like, I'm homeless and everything sucks. It was like, I cheated on my girlfriend and she kicked me out and I'm homeless and I should have thought of that before I became homeless. And I was just like, that was like his whole thing.
Wow.
For 3 minutes, and he got off and Melissa and I both were like, is he actually homeless? Like what, what is happening? And then we heard two other people ask the same question. And the guy was like, yeah, he's legitimately homeless.
Wow. Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
So I didn't see your first, because the way my Twitter timeline works is they go in, you know, order that you posted them. So I just thought you were telling jokes that were really fucking bad. And I just kept scrolling through. I'm like, is Matt having a nervous breakdown? And then finally I saw the first one's like, I'm about to tell a bunch of shitty jokes that I saw at improv. I was just like, thank God. Open mic.
Yeah.
It was, just read it. And I've promised my other comedian friends that I would continue to do that every time I go to an open mic, just share the jokes, like without naming what open mic or anything else, just like share the jokes that I hear because they are otherworldly at times.
That is
so anyways,
funny.
I did that. For the fourth, we didn't really do much, but we did like a 90s movie marathon.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
We kicked it off with Hackers.
Excellent. So I think I was thinking about this. I feel like Hackers was probably the first time that I saw a film where, or, you know, something on TV where you see a computer and you're like, oh, I think that's kind of bullshit. Like what the computer's doing.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's weird because now it's almost the norm where like you see a character in a TV show and they pull up a computer and it's always like some weird OS that you've never seen before.
Like when two people start typing on the keyboard at the same time.
Yeah. People are like pounding out weird things on the keyboard, or it's like they pick up their phone and it like kind of looks like an iPhone, but it's not really an iPhone.
One show.
What's that?
Mr. Robot.
Yeah. Here's the thing. This is what I wanted to bring up is that, I was playing, Quantum Break, right? A few months ago, like last month or whatever. Because that is a Microsoft game, every time a character picks up a phone or uses a computer, it's a Windows device. And like characters have Surface tablets and they're running Windows 10 and the phones are running like the Tile interface. And
whenever they picked up the phone, did somebody go, oh, you have a Windows phone? Huh.
Oh, no, it wasn't like that obvious, but like, you know. If a character used Cortana or something, it's, you know what I mean? But it's funny how we're so used to seeing fake computer stuff that when you see it, like the right stuff being used accurately, it's almost off-putting. And so that was just what I wanted to bring up real quick since you brought up Hackers. In Quantum Break, like everybody is using actual computer technology and it's super weird and it shouldn't be. Anyways.
And then And then we watched, what was the second one? Oh, Wayne's World.
Which was cool.
Wonderful. You should revisit it if you have.
Yeah? Still okay?
Still funny.
Nice.
Something related to that is I saw someone interviewed Mike Myers recently, or maybe it was a year or two ago, and the interviewer brought up the fact that like all of the catchphrases from the 90s basically came from Mike Myers, right?
Yeah.
You know, like Wayne's
Between,
World.
Like Austin Powers.
And Austin Wayne's Powers World. And Shrek. Like any like catchphrase that people said in the 90s, pretty much there's a 50% chance or better that it came from one of his films. That's kind of incredible, you know?
Yeah, watching Wayne's World happen is very... There is stuff they did in Wayne's World that I would have to like look into it. I don't think other movies were really doing it at the time. And I think it's become so commonplace that you forget that it might have started there, which is like he broke the fourth wall a lot, mm-hmm. where he would make a joke and then like reference the audience in the movie theater. Like, yeah, oh, right. Well, this happened, you know? And then like the multi-ending thing where they're like, now we'll do the happy ending and all of that kind of stuff. I feel like those kind of jokes are so normal now that we forget that they were very abnormal at a time. You
yes.
know?
Yes.
And so it was really good. And then we watched Jerry Maguire.
it's a good movie, man.
Yeah, I loved it. I still love it. It's good. It was good to remember Cameron Crowe being good. and then we watched Clueless.
Okay. Yeah.
Does Clueless hold up?
It was fun. Halfway through the movie, I leaned over and I said, would you believe me if I told you Paul Rudd was 45 years old during the taping of this movie to Melissa? And she laughed. She was like, oh, he does not. He was 27 in that movie and he looks exactly the same in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Like
we watched Wet Hot and then the TV series like back to back. And he's kind of the only character that basically looks exactly the same, you know?
Yeah.
How about Showalter?
Showalter's rough, man.
Yeah.
I love how there's just not, that's not even referenced to. Just like,
that's part of the joke, right? They went for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's see. I've seen Civil War since we last talked, which I really want to talk about, but I don't think Scott's seen it.
I've not. I just saw Age of Ultron.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you guys can help me out with a comic book question that I have.
Sure.
You know, the age of the dinosaurs was, you know, many, many hundreds of millions of years, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
From my estimation, the age of Ultron was about 2 days. Is that accurate? Because or did I miss something in the title of the film?
I think you're absolutely right.
I don't think any of us need to back up the logic of that movie. It is my least favorite of the Marvel movies by far.
It feels very much like a middle film, like what Quantum of Solace is to the Bond franchise. Like it was just,
it's
a continuation of something. It almost felt like,
oh, I mean, it was totally like, well, we need to do an Avengers movie is what it kind of felt like. It was just very, it happened.
It was like a music video or something.
Yeah. It had a couple really great scenes and then it was just kind of padded with like weird, like, just weird stuff,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
So, I didn't miss the fact that the age of the Ultron was like 2 days, right?
I mean, like Ultron in the comics is a much grander character.
I assumed,
Like Ant-Man creates him, right?
Yeah.
And he's like the guardian of the jail that's in the other dimension, essentially, for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then he goes bad over the process of being that AI in that jail over
time, I believe, if
I remember correctly. I'm probably skipping a lot of backstory and retcons that happened inside of that, but
mm-hmm.
he's just a bad robot who wants to kill
everything. But he started off good. He was created as a good robot and then he like becomes bad slowly, where in the movie he's like created and he's just kind of immediately like, well, let's just kill all Avengers, and you're like,
yeah, what? This is like all AIs that ultimately decide that the best thing that they can do to protect the human race is to destroy all the humans, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's the age-old tale.
The age-old AI tale.
Exactly.
And then I watched Batman versus Superman.
Oh, boy.
It's on my list, man. I see it's available digitally now.
Oh, you haven't watched it yet.
I have not. I want to watch the 3.5-hour cut that's available.
That's what I watched.
Oh, boy.
I tweeted that one as well. So if you're bored and you want to follow two fun threads,
I actually appreciated that you did not spoil anything.
I spoiled nothing.
Yeah, you spoiler free, live tweeted Batman v Superman.
It's It's a movie.
Yeah.
With a lot of storylines in
okay.
it. Okay. Did you watch it, Scott?
No, I did not.
Ah, it's yeah. Man, now yeah. I feel like Ash, who saw Civil War before all of us and then can't say any words.
Yeah,
about
it was hard to hold back.
Brutal.
It is not the worst movie I've ever watched, nor is it anywhere near the best movie I have ever watched.
Okay.
The fight sequence is at least cool. The punching.
The title shot, which I think I tweeted, the title fight, the actual Batman v Superman is very good. That was like fully satisfying and very fun. Excuse me, very fun. And the other fights are they're fine. They're okay. It's just really, it's sort of what you kind of expect, I guess, probably. Unless right. you're like a huge Zack Snyder fan, I don't know. It's something. It's kind okay. of a mess.
Hmm.
You just have to watch it. It's really way overdone. There's way too many stories going on. And then there's a lot of pointless things that happen that you're just like, wait, why is Lois Lane doing that? And then, you know, yeah. But I was very conscious while I was watching it to not, because I almost tweeted a few things and I was like, oh, if I tweet it saying like a specific thing, it's a huge spoiler for the whole movie. So I kind of like, I tried to be vague about the things that were really bad inside. Like somebody, both Ryan and Andrew said to me, like, it takes a weird turn at the last 40 minutes, and that is for sure true. So,
okay,
just watch. You know, I recommend watching and see what you think on your own. But that's about it. I think I, you know, watched some movies, did some stuff. It was fun. Scott, what have you been up to?
So I've been playing a lot of games. I finished Mirror's Edge Catalyst, which we talked about in the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I like that game. I would recommend it to fans of the previous game and, I don't know, fans of like skateboarding games, if that makes any sense.
I saw it was on sale, I think, right now. I was thinking about picking it up.
Yeah.
But I have so many games to play.
Yeah, I know. It's basically like if churches were a video game, it would be Mirror's Edge Catalyst, I think. You know? I mean, they have the song in the game, but the fit is so good, it just kind of makes sense. Yeah. And then I played Inside, which is the new game from the creators of Limbo. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. And then I went back to, you know, speaking of the game pile, there was a Games with Gold a few months ago for Child of Light, which is an Ubisoft downloadable title from the studio that does all of their like artistic games, you know. So they did a Rayman game, I think, and they did Valiant Hearts. I believe it's that same studio. You guys remember Child of Light, right?
Yeah.
So
I played through quite a bit of it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I played about an hour or two of it, and it's better than I remember it being when we played it at a PAX event, because I was very confused. I'm not like really good at the JRPG battle systems with the timelines and stuff.
Right.
But the game looks really cool, and it's just kind of relaxing to play. I'm not playing it on hard or anything, but it's obviously the visuals are really good, and there is just enough depth to the combat system where it doesn't feel like you're kind of zoning out. And you know, what's cool about it is that it uses a timeline where everybody is sort of on a different pace on the timeline, and then when you get to the point where you choose your action, there is sort of a casting period. So if you want to attack, that's sort of a medium speed action, and if you cast a spell, it takes a little longer. And what's cool about that is that you can actually interrupt your enemies, and they can interrupt you if you're in the middle of preparing an attack when you get attacked. So that's kind of cool. It's a fun mechanic, and it's kind of like a super chill game to play. And it's Games with Gold, so probably a lot of our listeners might actually have it available in their queue to play. This past weekend, currently, probably it'll be over by the time this comes out, but to celebrate the release of their new Warzone Firefight expansion, Microsoft made Halo 5 free over the 4th of July weekend. You both played Halo 5, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm about a little more than 2/3 of the way through the campaign.
So you paid for 20 minutes.
No. I'm playing on
25.
I'm playing on heroic. I've probably completed that much of the campaign in maybe like two nights of playing.
Right.
And it's weird because on heroic you kind of, you know,
what is two nights for you? Because that's like 2 hours for me.
Oh, it's probably, I don't know, I would estimate 5 or 6 hours.
Oh wow. Well, yeah. You're getting your money's worth then. You might not be a third. You might be further than you think you are.
Well, I know there's like 15 missions and I'm on like halfway through 12.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of missions where literally you just go and talk to two people and then it goes to the next mission, which is weird. I don't really get that.
Yeah.
I understand maybe there's a,
I don't know why they forced those breaks. It was a weird cutaway for like story that isn't really a story.
And while, I mean, I read the reviews and I see that people complain that the campaign was short and that's not really my beef. The campaign is difficult to follow. People said that as well. But I really think what they did was they just kind of like, it's almost as if they wanted to make a Halo game for the current gen platform and then just sort of do like all these callbacks to things that happened in the previous games, you know, instead of just taking one idea that worked in a previous game, they kind of just took all the ideas. They're like, oh, the Arbiter and then 4-player co-op. Oh, and then there's Master Chief. And then there's like, then we'll have two teams and people liked Reach. So we'll do that stuff too. You know, it was just kind of like many ideas crammed into one campaign. Did you guys kind of feel the same way? Or I mean, Matt,
I felt like I couldn't follow the story at all. And I was really hyped for it because I love like a lot of the voice cast is really great. And
yes.
I love the idea of all the different Spartans. So I got really excited for it. And then I just kind of felt like they were so underutilized within the campaign that I was just left with a bad taste in my mouth. Like,
sure,
you know, a couple of them don't speak and you're like, come on, there's 8 fucking Spartans. You can't give them like 5 minutes of dialogue. So I get to know these people, you know?
It's yeah.
Like, I know that's not why people play Halo games, but I just felt like that was just kind of a shame, you know?
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. Go ahead.
I felt kind of the same way. It like the story sort of burned me at the end of it. I was just like, oh, okay, it was just a letdown, I guess.
Yeah, I feel
even
like
for somebody
sort of,
who's confused by the story most of the time, they didn't feel like they did anything with it.
Yeah, I think they kind of reversed some of their own canon with what they decided to do with like the main storyline in this game. And the thing, like, you know, to Ash's point, what's confusing is that you've got a 4-person fire team, and all these people have faces and voices, right? And then there's Master Chief's team. He's got 3 people that are basically, I don't know, like red shirts. I don't really know.
Yeah.
You don't really get to know who these people are. I mean, they have names, but, unless they appeared in a previous game and I'm just not aware of it, I just don't know, you know, as a casual fan, what is going on. My main complaint with the campaign is the AI. I think this would be a really spectacularly fun game to play, in 4-player co-op. If we were all, you know, to play together through the campaign, I bet that'd be really fun. But the AI is weird because what I figured out over the course of playing the game is that the only way that you can really utilize them is basically just to play the game like straight up with your strategy. You know what I mean? Like you just kind of, if as long as you're always just kind of charging down the middle, guns a-blazing, then your AI kind of hangs with you. But if you, like the second you try to do something tactical, like, you know, oh, I'm going to go take this ridge and overtake this turret and then kind of rain down fire. And I want everyone else to go fight. Like that's where everything kind of falls apart because.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you like, let's say, oh, instead of you doing it, maybe you send someone else to go do it. Their reliability to, you know, kill like one soldier on a turret is very questionable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, when you try to get them to do things that are more tactical in nature, they become very unreliable. And of course, if you're in a place which is sort of hidden from a lot of the action, if you're downed, the likelihood that your team will come to revive you is also very low too, which kind of defeats the purpose of really trying to play tactically in the game.
I did feel like their ability to revive you, as long as you weren't up against one of the one-hit wonders that's in the game.
Yeah.
Was usually pretty good for me. I think where they failed tactically most of the time was, like you're saying, where it was like more of an actual battlefield setting.
Yes.
Where you've got multiple guys you're trying to deal with, and then you've got these 3 like yokels you're trying to run around while you're doing something important, you know?
Yeah. That's a good thing to point out, because the Halo is kind of broken up into walking sections and platforming, and then you get to some choke points sometimes where you have to fight through some enemies. And then, like you were saying, there are points in the game where the battlefield opens up and it's kind of more of like an all-out you know, all-out war where you have multiple ways to proceed through the level. But, you know,
I got caught, I don't know if you've hit this, I got caught multiple times where I'd be crazy low on ammo or have the worst combination of guns, have no options available to me, and then I've got, you know, the three idiots running around getting killed over and over again where I'm like having to revive them or whatever it might be. But it was one of those, like, I felt like there were times where the checkpoints were not to my favor, you know. Yeah, like it was
checkpoints,
like,
checkpoints in Halo are always weird to me how they work.
Yeah, you get this weird checkpoint where you've got like your pistol with 5 ammo and then like an alien gun that barely works with like 20 ammo, and then there's like no guns on the ground and you're fighting a boss and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do in this situation?
I mean, you know? That can also work to your advantage sometimes, because you can get lucky and charge through a level, and as long as you hit that checkpoint you can just kind of keep running if you die, you know. That's how I completed a lot of Halo 2, was just running through checkpoints while cloaked as the Arbiter. Yeah, it's super weird. And I think it was probably a decision that they probably did a lot of research on, but I don't really agree with using one button to provide all of the commands to your fire team. You know, because if you, anything you want them to do is just the down button, right? So you want them to pick up the weapon, you hit the down button. You want them to get in a vehicle, you push the down button. You want them to go, you know, take a point on the battlefield, you press the down button. And it's kind of confusing because sometimes you do the wrong thing and you don't really know how many of your squad is going to go do the thing you told them to do. You know, like, is everybody going to get in the vehicle or is everybody going to go pick up this weapon? It's very confusing. And then I tried one round of the war zone, which is, you know, supposed to be like the main war zone, the firefight, the one that was advertised as like, you know, PvPvE. And what I saw, I mean, maybe I didn't play enough, but I thought it was going to be, you know, it was like a 12-on-12 battle. And then I thought there were going to be tons of enemies on the battlefield, but they kind of just randomly spawn in different places throughout the match. And there's bonuses for killing them. And it's not really what I expected.
Oh, you expected like a full like war scenario?
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was going to be a war scenario. And the round we played was objective based. There was like points you had to capture and a base that could be destroyed. And it was just kind of a weird thing. They use like a card system, sort of like Titanfall, but it seems a little more heavy-handed, you know. So like if you want a special weapon, you kind of have to like burn a card to use it. I didn't really see a lot of weapons scattered around the battlefield, which I think is different for Halo multiplayer. And I know there are different modes and stuff, and I only played one, but I mean, it seems to me to be very different from what I've, you know, what I've seen in prior Halo multiplayer games, which is weird. So I don't know that I'll play that. I'll probably just complete the campaign and just move on, unfortunately, unless there's a co-op opportunity. But I doubt it.
There's no co-op. I mean, the multiplayer is solid, you know. It's Halo multiplayer, but it's filled with people who are better than you, so it's it's hard to get in and out of that. And I think that's what burned me about the campaign more than anything, was the story felt weak, the characters felt thin. And then it was like you finish and you're like, well, I guess I can multiplayer, but I'm only going to get, you guys weren't playing with me, you know, so I was only going to get so much out of it.
Yeah.
It was rough. I don't know. The game is gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's beautiful.
The mechanics are all fucking perfect, but like beyond that, it's hard to argue for.
Need a little bit more substance. While I was completing Mirror's Edge, I half watched season 4 of Orange is the New Black because my wife was watching it on TV.
Oh, nice.
Do you guys watch that show?
Yeah, I haven't watched season 4 yet, so we're not caught up. We wanted to finish some other shit before we started.
Well, having never seen the show before, what I saw was very, very interesting.
Oh, you haven't seen any seasons?
No,
I haven't either. I'm with you. I've never watched a single
episode. Oh, it's really good. You guys would really like it.
Yeah, she kind of like, she was watching it. She like binge watched it, and I kind of just glanced over from time to time to see what was going on, and it seemed really, really fascinating. So
it's really well acted. It's one of those shows where you just kind of get roped into sort of the day-to-day that those characters are going through. So it's really nice.
It's really fascinating. So that brings us to Ash.
Yeah. I haven't been doing as many exciting things as you guys. I've been still playing Overwatch. Uh-huh. It's actually getting better and not worse, which is cool.
You played with friends though, right?
Yeah, I played a bit. My friends list is growing, so I have some people from my old job, and I have some, you know, some old listeners, and I played some with Michael Coles, who we played a lot of Mass Effect with, and
he's like
he is like a
pro player.
He's insane. He's really, really good.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. I've been playing with groups of people, and almost played with Kate the other night, but we didn't quite quite link up.
Didn't sync up. Yeah.
So still playing Overwatch. Getting okay at it. I'm still like, you know, I guess I'll talk about it a little bit more in the news section about the ranked play, but you know, it's one of those games that it has a lot of layers to it, and every character, I think there's 21 characters now. I keep trying new ones just because that's how I am. I like to see how they all play, and they all are fun. And it's like, you figure you'd pick up one and be like, oh fuck this guy, I hate this guy, he's not fun. And you're like, oh man, like this character is fun. And you're like, this character, you're like, oh shit, well this character is fun too. And somehow they managed to just make them all gel together and all perform differently, but at the same time be viable in combat.
That's cool that so there's kind of like more to explore, you know, so even if you sour on a particular character, you can always learn something new, you know, play differently.
Right. And if you know, if you're a person that likes to snipe, for instance, there's a couple different sniping options, so you don't have to pick the same.
Stop pushing it on me, Ash.
Oh, I'm not. But yeah, there's a lot to it, and it's really, really, really well done.
Oh, but you're saying the snipers are really good, right? Like, it's really fun to be a sniper?
Some of the most satisfying sniping in a game in a long time, but it's also the most technically challenging. There's characters that are, like, really easy to use, like this character Reaper that has, like, dual shotguns that you can just run up and, you know, blow people up. But the sniper is, he plays a lot like the sniper from Team Fortress 2, so you have to charge up your shot before you release it. So it's a lot of, you know, you can kill almost anybody with headshots, but it's a lot of precision. So probably I think the character Widowmaker is the hardest to use and be good with. So you actually don't see too many snipers anymore. They kind of died out. Yeah. I started watching the new CBS, I guess, drama comedy called Braindead, which we'll talk about in the review section. But very briefly, I was surprised by it. I really like it. It's different. It's kind of very Body Snatchers-esque, which is kind of cool. I've been listening to a new podcast. I guess it's maybe about a year old. I don't actually know when it started. I'm guessing it's about a year old at this point. But it's called Unqualified, and it's Anna Faris's podcast. And she does a relationship advice podcast that is fucking incredible, guys. I cannot tell you, like, this is the one podcast I've been listening to lately where I'll be like riding around or I'll be at a place in public and listening to it, and I will literally laugh out loud just because it's so ridiculous.
That's awesome.
She does long form interviews with really incredible guests. She had like TJ Miller on, and James Gunn, and Aubrey Plaza, and Lisa Kudrow, Ellen Page. Like, her guests are phenomenal, and it's basically
Famous or something.
Yeah, it's like she's famous or something. Right? But she like sits at a table with these people. She has them over to her house, and she just asks them about, you know, their life and their relationships, and just has them tell silly stories. And it's just it's really lighthearted and really silly, and it's just so, there's something about it that is just so joyful. It's like one of those podcasts you're just like, oh, there's no, you know, she doesn't need to do it. She's not doing it to like increase her level of fame. It's like, she's doing it because she, you know, she wants to get to know these people and she wants to hear their stories. So definitely check out Anna Faris's Unqualified. It's on iTunes. It's free. I want to say this week's episode is another Aubrey Plaza, and Retta and Chris Pratt, all the same episode.
That's
so
awesome.
It's just, yeah, them goofing off on mics and having fun. So check that out. And other than that, man, been trying to go through the backlog of shows. Like, we're trying to get to Orange is the New Black, but we were like, we need to finish up like Vikings and a whole bunch of other stuff that we've been just putting off.
Yep,
but it's weird when you have a 2-month-old kid, like, you pretty much can't watch like a show that requires
attention.
Yeah. When both of you are, you know, awake, because one of you has to like take care of the kid while he's like gooing and spitting up and shitting and stuff. So it's like, you know, we can only watch stuff in short bursts. So I've been watching like shows that I want to watch, and she's been watching shows that she wants to watch. So that's how I got to Braindead, which we'll talk about later.
Cool.
Well, I talked forever. Can I throw three more things on really quick? Like, sure. Really fast things, just recommendations.
Okay.
Throwing out some recs.
Yeah.
Ash's podcast thing made me think of it. I picked up two new podcasts. I think I've talked to you guys a little bit about on Slack possibly, but one is How to Be Amazing with Michael Ian Black. Have you guys listened to that?
Mm-hmm. No, I have not.
It is fantastic.
I listened to a couple.
Everything, Yeah, it's everything you'd want out of like Mark Maron's podcast, but like without Mark Maron, which is the worst part of Mark Maron's podcast.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, whatever. Some people love him. I just, he gets on my nerves really
easily. What is it called again?
It's called How to Be Amazing.
Yeah.
And he has on just, you know, like famous guests, but the episode I super recommend you starting with, and there's another one that I think our audience would love, is Jim Gaffigan, you should start with. It's a really interesting look into Jim Gaffigan's comedy and how he came about doing it, because he's sort of this weird, he's like become an outsider comic by being mainstream, which is really weird, I think, at the end of the day. But you should check that one out. And then the other one is Felicia Day. He does a really, really, really awesome interview with Felicia Day.
Oh, great.
And he's just really good at interviews, man. And like gets into real meat about a lot of stuff and kind of about the notion of just doing it for yourself because no one else is going to do it for you, like with Felicia Day. And that one's super good. I really recommend. The other one, which is weird because it feels like a theme, is called How to Be a Person. And it's these two, I think they write for like Late Night out here in New York, mm-hmm. two comedians. It's a guy and a girl, and they interview other people. But what's what's interesting about it is that they have them like teach them how to do something very normal.
Oh.
So they'll start off and the podcast will kind of be about like, how did you get started in the business that you're in? You know, whether it's comedy or movies or TV or whatever it is. And then like somebody teaches them how to make a pie. Or like how to throw a party, or like it's these really interesting concepts of like just weird things you would need to do to be a person kind of stuff. So that one's really good. And then the last thing's actually a show on YouTube, which I think is also on cable. And it's a comedian called Chris Gethard. And he has a show called The Chris Gethard Show. And I don't know if I've talked about it on here before. I haven't really watched it until recently, but it's this just gonzo talk show. It is absolutely batshit crazy. He used to run a cable access show here in New York, and like comedians picked it up. He's from the like UCB crowd, the where Amy Poehler and all them came out of. And it's just this weird show, and his whole thing is about inclusivity. So he'll just have like weird people on to talk about weird stuff, and it's very weird and very fun. And there's an episode that has Paul Shearer and Jason Manzoukas, who are both from The League. And Paul Shearer's, and they're both from How Did This Get Made podcast as well. But it is bonkers. I'll just tell the concept really quick and then we'll move on. They have a dumpster on stage with them.
What?
And the setup of the show is if somebody calls in and guesses what's in the dumpster, they'll reveal it. And if no one guesses it by the end of the show, then they're just not going to show you what's in the dumpster.
Okay.
That's so
the
weird.
The whole concept. And people start guessing. And the only thing I'll say, because you should watch the episode, it's on YouTube in full, no commercials. Somebody gets very, 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 very close, like on the second guess. And I mean crazy close, like insanely close.
And so then the audience rest of the knows show, what it is?
No one knows what it is except Chris Gethard and the producers.
Oh, okay.
And then the show goes completely off the rails. And then they show Paul Shearer and Jason Manzoukas at some point what's in the dumpster. And they both freak out and start trying to help the audience guess what it is. It's it's crazy and amazing and super funny. And the rest of the shows that he has are all similarly like weird and wonderful. And you should absolutely check it out. It's just called The Chris Gethard Show, and it's on YouTube. And that's
Sounds
it.
Good.
Sorry.
Awesome.
Didn't mean to derail. But they're very good things, and I don't want to review them. So there you go.
Sounds cool. Good.
News.
So quite possibly the biggest piece of gaming news this week is this whole Counter-Strike gambling debacle that is going on right now. And it sounds so stupid and mundane and ridiculous and not worthy of talking about. But then I looked into it, and it turns out that Counter-Strike gambling for skins in Counter-Strike is a $2.3 billion a year industry.
Yeah, what the fuck? I saw that in an article and I was like, what?
Yeah, and I'm just like, holy crap, I had no idea. So there's essentially like a whole underground mafia skin betting scene going on right now. And yes. Some of these rare weapon skins for Counter-Strike go for thousands and thousands of dollars because they're so incredibly rare. And I guess the big controversy this week was that There were two gentlemen that were promoting a site where you could go and actually bet and gamble for Counter-Strike skins. And they put up this YouTube video. They're very popular YouTubers. I won't say their name just because we don't want to get involved. But very popular YouTubers. And they put this video up saying, like, holy shit, I'm about to use this site. This site's incredible. And then they used the site in their YouTube video and they won like $14,000 in this video that they just kind of like randomly did. And basically went on to promote the site and show how easy it is to win money and bragged about it. But it turns out that they owned the site. They owned the site that they were promoting.
Oh, surprise.
And the site was called Counter-Strike Go Lotto. And you could actually go and you pull like a virtual arm and then little spinnies go by and you can perhaps win, Counter-Strike Go skins. But you're actually using real money to pull the arm and betting with real money. So these guys were just raking in dough and nobody knows exactly how much they made. And it's kind of opened up the eyes of the internet to this whole big scene that's going on right now with Counter-Strike Go and
it's ridiculous.
How crazy and illegal it is. And sometimes I think some of the sites, the gambling sites, say you only have to be like 12 or 13 to gamble. So there's this whole, like, it's fucked up, man. But I had no idea how much money people were making, and how much this stuff actually cost. It was unbelievable.
It's I feel like anytime there is competitive gaming involved or you know, the exchange of goods and or money there, you can almost be assured that there's cheating, you know, at some point or some kind of shady business or behavior or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But this is cheating. Like this is cheating on an inside level, which is weirder, right? Like, it's not like they figured out how to game the system as outsiders. These were guys who are on the inside. It's very weird. I never realized the business was that size. That is like,
yeah. Yeah,
that's a number that you don't just like throw around for funsies. Like businesses would die to have that kind of level of
right. And it's all just for different colors on weapons. You know, it's really strange to me. It's
so crazy,
so outside of my wheelhouse. But I guess there's a lot of talk now that of course, you know, Valve is going to get involved and it really crack down on this illegal gambling. And it's strange though, because in a way, like in a roundabout way, it actually kind of helps them, you know, having people like that are really, you know, that spend a lot of money, willing to hype up, you know, their product. It's interesting. And it makes you wonder why they haven't tried to shut it down already. And it might be, you know, financially beneficial to Valve in the end to have, you know, this underground gambling scene happening. I don't know.
It's crazy. Cause it's fake stuff, like the developer just invented, it's like a hat with a box on top of it, and then you limit the amount, you create this like artificial demand, and then someone buys it for $1,000. It's mind-boggling. And then you wear it in the game, and then people are like, hey, he's got a box on his head, that's pretty cool. And like, that is it.
Yeah. So my, like, this is a bigger question and we don't have to address it now, especially in full. We can do like an episode we always talk about doing and never do about it later.
Yeah.
But do you guys sort of view this as a sign of gaming growing up? Like the shit that we see, the things that we tend to not talk about just because of sort of how they work, if that makes sense.
Oh.
Or the attitude around them, I guess. Do you kind of see this as like, well, this is what happens when all of a sudden more eyes are put onto a thing, because it's gaming, like growing into this mass audience with older and older people getting involved and people looking more into what's actually happening in the background. It's not just a bunch of guys kind of like shitting out games that people are playing anymore. Like we have grown into a full-on, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry in many different ways, apparently, that we weren't even paying attention to in some parts, you know.
I tend to agree, but I think that in general, anywhere that there's a buck to be made, you know, someone will do it. We talked last week, you weren't here, we talked last week about how people apparently will buy Humble Bundles, right? And then they'll turn around and go to a gray market website like G2A and sell their Steam keys on those markets that basically, you know, to make like a couple of bucks of profit and essentially just, you know, undercut the developer who donated the keys for charity And then, you know, you take a sail away and get a couple bucks on the side for yourself. So, like, that's the world we live in, you know?
Yeah, it's right. And, it, you know, I think it all boils down to digital gaming really being the Wild West. And, you know, and actually monetizing digital content is such a weird thing, to the point where people are, you know, willing to spend real money on, like you guys were talking about, slight, you know, slight alterations to a weapon model or to an outfit or, and, you know, and what it really boils down to, and this is just going to be a weird parallel, but like people that spend, you know, $10,000 on their rims, it's like, well, the rims function the same as normal fucking rims, dude.
Yeah.
Like, but they just look cooler, so it makes you feel better about yourself. And it's the same thing with like cool looking digital content. Like functionally, it's not going to really do too much for your game. It's just going to make you feel cool.
Yeah, you know. I'm sure there's some, you know, psychology behind this that we don't need to talk about. But I agree. Yeah. You're right. It was a good analogy.
Thanks. But anyway, that's the latest, and maybe we'll hear a little bit more about that later. But I thought it was crazy, and I'm curious what's going to happen to these two guys, and I'm hoping that, you know, they get in a lot of trouble, because I think it's shitty.
Yeah, it sounds pretty shitty.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
Yeah, it does.
Let's move on to some more positive news. The Games with Gold for July have been announced, and they started out with a big one, Banner Saga 2, which is pretty awesome. That's the. Awesome.
Did you guys ever finish 1? Did you get all the way through?
No, I didn't.
No. Yeah, me either. It's hard. I have a friend who did.
I didn't realize that the game was as difficult as it would be. And so I was, I feel like I would want to just start over and play on easy mode and just sort of enjoy the narrative of the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause the combat is brutal, like super brutal.
It is. And the narrative's great. It's actually good.
Yeah. I'm just not like, I'm not crazy about those like, you know, XCOM style games where the, you know, you lose permadeath, or you lose a guy and you basically like screwed for the rest of the game because you're trying to heal this person up, you know, over multiple battles and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I just don't have the time, but, you know, Banner Saga 2, that's cool. Another game I wanted to bring up for, Xbox One, the back half of the month is going to be Tumblestone.
Man, we've interviewed Tumblestone like 25 times.
Yeah. We talked to that guy many times, his name is Ty, and the rest last name escapes me, but he's a super cool dude. He, created the game The Bridge, which was the, puzzle game based on the M.C. Escher drawings.
Right.
You remember that one? Ty Taylor is his name. We've met him many times at PAX events and such. And he's a super cool guy. And I think his team's a little bigger now. And we've played Tumblestone a couple of times as well. And it's
Scott was good at it. I was not.
Yeah,
of course.
It's a fun game. It's kind of like a, you know, shape drop game, like a
they were like, do you like Pokemon Puzzle League?
Yeah, it's almost like
here's
PPL
a new version of that for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that I call it PPL should tell you everything you need to know about my obsession with Tetris Attack / Pokemon Puzzle League / what was it called, Yoshi's? There was like a third version of that game.
One too.
Yeah, there was a Tetris Attack, and then there was a Japanese import GameCube game that I got, which like Yoshi's. It's the same game, but and then they made a game called Planet Puzzle League for the DS. But that's my jam. So Tumblestone kind of fits into this very well, which is cool. The 360 games are Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Vegas 2. Vegas 1 was a previous Games with Gold game, if I'm not mistaken. And then another game that we played a really long time ago called Tron Evolution. Do you remember this?
Gosh.
We were all hanging out at Ash's house one night, and I think
Brombie,
somebody from InSpace brought the game over, and I just remember I sat down and played it in your living room for an hour.
That was a long time
while
ago.
You guys were doing stuff, so that's pretty cool too. From what I remember, it was a pretty good game for, you know, for being like sort of a movie inspired game, which is awesome. Right.
I thought we played the Wii version.
InSpace made the Wii version, which we played like at the Science Center during Otronicon.
Yeah.
And then they also had a copy of Tron Evolution. Yeah. So those are the games with gold. And cool. Yeah, so it's good stuff. Good to see. Cool. Especially like a game like Banner Saga 2, which was just released and is now free for members. I like seeing that. And it's free. So what are you going to do? It's awesome.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Big news in the Overwatch world. They finally dropped the competitive seasons. So the launching of season one started, I want to say, at the beginning of last week. And what that means is that there is now a competitive mode that has unique rewards for people that play. It's meant for serious players. And you can rank anywhere from rank 1 to rank 100. And then at the end of the season, you get rewarded according to whatever your rank is.
What kind of rewards do you get?
Right now it's like, it's all cosmetic stuff.
Hats with boxes on it.
It's all cosmetic stuff. So it's nothing that like will alter gameplay at all. So like if you, you basically work up a certain amount of currency for the number of competitive games that you win. And if you get like 300 of a certain amount of currency, you can get a golden gun for whatever character that you want. And there's like different, sprays and things like that. And revealed rewards at the end of the season that they haven't actually probably made yet. So people are working towards stuff that they don't even know yet. But this is kind of a big deal because they had back in the beta, they had a competitive mode that they completely scrapped. The way the ranking system worked, they threw out and due to people being really upset about it, and they totally reworked it. Now what happens is you get in and you do 10 matches. And those matches determine where you place, and then you fight against people that'll be a similar placement. So I did my 10 placement matches, and I did what they call solo queuing, where you just queue up by yourself, and you basically queue up with other solo queue people. And I did 5 losses, 5 wins, which is exactly how I play all the time.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's a pretty good sign of a balanced game.
Yep, I'm not good and I'm not terrible, so that's where I placed. And right now I'm like sitting right dab in the middle at rank 50, which I heard is like where, you know, I guess looking at the curve, it is like a perfect bell curve. So most people are sitting right around level 45 to level 50.
Sounds about right.
With the highest ranked players being like 70 to 76 right now, maybe a little bit higher.
Oh, okay.
But people haven't really hit those, you know, the upper echelon of the higher ranks yet. So
do you continue to play in order to hit those higher ranks? Is that how that works? Is that like,
you can. So right now I haven't played competitive in a couple days just because it's more stressful for me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because if you lose, you lose ranking. So
yeah.
And you lose a lot. So if you like, say if you win a game, you'll maybe gain, and there's a bar, you'll maybe gain like a quarter of a rank. So if I'm level 50 and I go up against another team, I may get like a quarter of the way to 51. But if I lose that placement round, I could drop half of the way back into 49.
Damn.
So it's really easy to lose rank now and very hard to gain it, which is you know.
It sounds like they learned a lot from Hearthstone, and
I think it is very, very similar to Hearthstone. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds really similar to the competitive mode there, where the ranking is favored in the people who kind of, not favored, but it's brutal if you're bad.
Yeah,
like not terrible, and not super fast if you're good. You know what I mean? Like you have to kind of work at it.
Yeah, but it's
I would really hesitate fun. To use the word grindy. It's not that. It's just it's difficult with the right amount of balance.
You but know. It kind of also gives you something to like practice. Like I'll get on and like practice with a couple of my characters now that I consider like my main characters, mm-hmm. right? So
right.
I'll get on for like a half an hour and run 3 or 4 matches with like one of my main characters and just kind of like try and hone my skills for the next time I go on and play competitive. But it's neat. And I wish there were the rewards that I was a little bit more excited about. I'm one of those people that really doesn't care for golden guns. I think it's kind of gaudy. I know some people are very excited about getting like a golden weapon for their character, but it's neat. And it's also really neat to see when you get on and you're playing this competitive mode, people are using their headsets and they are like being very specific about the characters that they're playing. So it's a very tactical and ordered experience. Whereas if you just go on and do, you know, a pickup group and in a casual match, it's just going to kind of be people fucking around. So you can kind of have your choice now, which is nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
You want to be super serious for like a half an hour and, you know, you're feeling that adrenaline rush and you're ready to play, then you can hop on and do some competitive, or you just feel like learning a character or fucking around, you can, you know, go ahead and do that too. Yep. So, enjoying it. I think it's neat.
You know what we call solo queue in the theme park capital of the world? That is Orlando. We call that single rider.
Single rider.
Single rider.
That's right. Oh, I have a quick 2-second story that has to do with that.
Single rider? So, I hope it's a love story.
I went with my sister to Universal.
Okay.
And my parents were like, you need to take your sister. It'll be so much fun. And I'm like, all right, it's cool. My sister's like fucking 30. So she's not like 10, but my parents were like, take it to the theme park. You'll have a great old time.
Yeah.
So we went, took her to Harry Potter, which she really wanted to go do. And my mom was like, I got a surprise for you. We got you fast passes. And we're like, oh, great. And I look in the back of the fast passes, and it's not for any of the Harry Potter stuff at all.
Oh, no.
And that's literally all we did. And they were like $100. It was kind of ridiculous. So we're at the new Gringotts ride at Universal here in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And we don't have fast passes, but I was wearing a Star Labs shirt from Flash.
Oh, cool.
And a guy walks up to me, and he works there. He's like, oh, no. So we started talking about the latest season of Flash. And he's like, go over to that guy over there and tell him PJ sent you. And I'm like, all right. And I go, PJ sent me. And they go, oh, okay. And they just like pulled the rope back, and I got to skip the whole fucking line with my sister.
Oh my God. It was
the best thing ever, just from having a conversation about the Flash. So if you're listening, PJ, Universal, thank you. I appreciate it.
You know what? This is not the first time I've heard of this happening. I think we were, I was with a few friends. We were queuing up for the Hulk ride, right?
Yeah.
And one of my friends who we all know has a very long, long old man style beard. We know who I'm talking about. And basically the park attendant liked this guy's beard, and we had a conversation with him, and he's like, right this way. And then just put us right on the ride. And like, that was it. So,
I think they just don't give a fuck, because it's like normally not a career. It's like their summer job. And they're just like, what am I going to get in trouble for letting this guy like get in front of the line?
Yeah, anyway,
it was super cool, because it was like 103 degrees out and we were sweating our asses off.
I feel like the rules are a little looser there than if you are, let's say, a cast member at a different establishment.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk really quick about summer sales in our last bit of news. We've already had summer sales from Good Old Games and Steam. And right now we're in the very beginning of the Xbox summer sale. And then Amazon Prime Prime Day is coming up again next week. Did you guys buy anything so far on the PC game sales?
I have not.
I made a conscious effort to not open Steam during the Steam sales.
That's probably for the best. I did the same thing, and we'll, you know, getting back to our question later, my Steam like backlog is so huge that I looked at like stuff that I had queued up on my wish list, and I just said, forget about it. Cause it's just, I just can't keep adding to it at this point. There's just too much.
It's insane. Like I cannot do it. It's not feasible,
you know. And I think I just between
have to not turn it on and look at it,
between those sales and now Humble Bundles too, where you can get
I
don't know, five games at a time for $5, I wouldn't be surprised if like the average Steam user has like 100 games in their queue, right? Which is crazy. And then if you're on Good Old Games, they've given out a couple of free games here and there too, and I think just by default you could have about
like
20 games.
Mention games with gold, like my games are just backing up right now, where I just have an insane amount on my Xbox and on my PC that there's no way I'm gonna get through them all.
Oh, there's such a overflow of this back, like there's no shortage of games in the world anymore with like this kind of stuff and free to play. It's insane. So the Xbox summer sales started up. They've got tons of games, but I'm not really sure. You know, the newer stuff obviously isn't as discounted as much as the older stuff. Games on Xbox 360 are obviously a little cheaper, you know, more heavily discounted down to like $2 in some cases, which is crazy. Like you can buy Murdered Soul Suspect for like $3. Contrast on 360 is $3.
I believe Wolfenstein's really cheap too.
Yeah. Wolfenstein New Order on Xbox One is on sale. Mirror's Edge is on sale right now. I was targeting, I was thinking about getting Watch Dogs. Like the entire game is like $20 US, which is kind of cool.
That's cool.
That seems like the right price for that game. And, you know, and like we talked about before, it's an Ubisoft game, right? So you know what you're going to end up doing. You know, you're going to play through a story. It's going to be like, all right. And then there's going to be about 250 collectibles in the city that I'm going to have to go find. And it's been long enough. I might be ready for that. Again, and $20.
Man. Really? Are you ready? Really ready for that again?
I don't know. We'll see. I have a week to decide, right? Something that I wanted to bring up just because it's such a crazy deal is there is a Saints Row Metro double pack, and it's $13.75 US. It includes both Saints Row games, Saints Row 4 and Get Out of Hell, as well as the two remakes of the Metro games. So basically you get four games, four full games at one time for $13.75, which I thought was pretty crazy too. Was there anything that you guys were sort of eyeing in these sales?
Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, only because of Ash, Far Cry 4 is only like $30 for the gold edition, and I've thought about picking that up.
Oh, it's so good.
Is that good? I was looking at, I saw Far Cry Primal was also...
Was that on sale?
I've never played any of the Far Cry games, though.
Me either. And it's literally 100% based on Ash that I was like, oh, maybe I'd pick
you
that
watched
up.
Me play that a lot when you were sitting at my place, and it's crazy fun. It's just
is it like one of those open world destruction games where you just blow stuff up, or...?
There's a little bit more skill to it. So there's like a really good stealth system, in the later ones, like Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 4. So you can do really great stealth assassinations, and you know, the whole gist of the game is taking down different bases and getting creative in the way that you take these bases down. So elimination of enemies, you know, you can, you know, hunt animals and do all sorts of different fun stuff and eventually become this ultra cool ninja assassin type character by the end of it. So.
Something in my backlog is, what is that? The sort of fake 80s movie Far Cry?
Oh, the,
Blood Dragon.
Blood Dragon.
Yeah. So, I was targeting, Watch Dog, and maybe, I don't know, probably I'll pick up some indie game. How about you, Matt?
I just bought one.
What'd you get?
Right now.
I got
Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
There you go.
I bought a second controller, and Melissa and I can play together.
Score.
So good.
Great family games. For sure.
Yeah. I'm waiting for Warhammer Total War to come out.
Oh, yeah.
Go down in price. Because, man, if you look at the mods on that, some of the mods are so cool. So different factions and added gore and all sorts of really fun stuff. So I'm waiting for that to go down in price. I've been kind of jonesing for a new strategy game.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. That's super cool. Yeah. I wish there were more indie titles on sale for Xbox One, but those usually come in normal sales anyways. And I also wish that there was more consistency in offering season passes at a discount. So as an example, you can buy the new Tomb Raider. You can buy the new Tomb Raider with the season pass, but there's no discount on just the season pass.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate. And that happens in a couple of places, but that's not to say that there aren't plenty of other options to choose from. Like you can pick up Life is Strange or Shadow of Mordor, which you guys really liked, or Mortal Kombat. You know, a game that I would recommend to you, Ash, is Oxenfree that I recommended prior just because of the content of the game. And even Quantum Break has a small discount, which I so far might be in the running for my game of the year. So
wow.
Yeah. And then and then I think Amazon Prime Day is coming up, but they hyped it up, right? And then last year,
I don't know, man.
It was almost like a flea market. They were just clearing out their warehouses or something.
Like a flea market? It was like, do you want 10 sheets of paper? One penny. And you're like, I don't, what? Why are you selling this?
Yeah, the deals are so weird. I don't really understand what they're doing.
10 packs of tape.
Like, yeah. So we'll see.
What the hell is this Prime sale?
We'll see what they do next year. So I just wanted to bring it up because the Xbox sale is cool just because it's generally harder to find good deals on console games. So there you go. This past week, there was a new game from Playdead called Inside, which came out for Xbox One. I think it came out for PC as well. And it's from the studio that created the game Limbo, which was sort of like I don't know if it was like a mega hit, but maybe had a cult following. Is that accurate to say?
I think it did really well.
Like, it was like multi-platformed. Like I think it hit on all the right things. Limbo was pretty big.
Yeah. So this is, you know, similarly to that, I don't want to say too much about this game, and I also don't want to talk about it that way. You know what I mean? I don't want to keep going like, oh, I don't want to tell you what's going to happen in the game because I don't want to do that to you guys.
I heard that you can barely even talk about the mechanics of this game without like giving something away. Like it's one of those games that it's just very hard to talk about without revealing something.
Yes. And I also don't want to be that way to the point where it like raises your expectations unreasonably, right? So, you know, all I'll say about this game is that it, you know, like Limbo, it is a, in a very general sense, you might describe it as a puzzle platformer, but it's not like, that's not the main attraction of the game, right? The main attraction of the game is sort of like the atmosphere or the narrative, if you will, right? So, you know, there are puzzle platformers out there that are more like hardcore and the puzzling is the key and there's like hundreds of puzzles and you're doing all these crazy tricks and stuff. And this game is more about sort of participating in the game, if that makes any sense. What I'll quickly say is that it kind of has a, it's dark, it's a dark game in the same way that Limbo is sort of a dark game. They went with a slightly different art style, which uses a lot of, and you can see this in the screenshots, it's not a spoiler, it uses a lot of sort of very simple sort of muted colors and muted textures. It's not, it's interesting because if you look at the screenshots, the environments are simultaneously like incredibly detailed, but also not super detailed because the textures are not super detailed, if that makes any sense. It's like intentionally minimalistic, but they do it in a very intelligent way. And let's see, what else can I tell you about this game? I would say that, okay, so we don't rank games on this podcast, right? But if you were to think about games in the sense of, and I think maybe I think Destructoid kind of went to this model too. If you think of games in the sense of genres, and if I were to go to you and to say, hey, I'm interested, like I'm not really into arena shooters, but I want to try just one, you would probably say, hey, well, you should probably start with Overwatch, or maybe you should start with Team Fortress 2, because those are probably maybe the best of what that genre has to offer.
Right.
Yeah. I would probably say the same thing for Inside.
Okay. Wow.
For sort of the idea of a more like atmospheric narrative, you know, game where you're kind of doing like puzzle platformy kind of things, but that's not really the point, you know?
Yeah.
And it also, in a very sort of obtuse way, reminds me of how I felt the first time that I played Another World. Do you remember that game?
Yes.
So Another World is that weird game where you crash land on an alien planet and you're kind of like running around and, you know, it's sort of like the story is told through the actions in the game, but it's sort of like a lot, you know, very open to your interpretation because there's no like dialogue and there's no talking in the game. And so in a very sort of, in a weird way, this game reminds me of that game in some ways, but it is much darker than that game. That was more of like an action game. I would probably say that everybody at some point should try and play this game. Just because I really think that
what's the sort of total run through time? Like if you were to sit down and play, is it a one sitting playthrough?
You could probably do it in one sitting. It's you know, like, okay, so if you played Limbo, you know that you can play through the game and it offers a challenge, and then there are also things that you can do that are sort of related in the achievements, related to you doing certain actions or finding things within the game. So Inside has some of that kind of stuff as well, where you could just play straight up through the game and just do, you know, do the game. And then there are also some things to, extra things to do, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to hype it up by saying like, oh, I don't want to spoil it, but I know it's like, so I said,
this is Scott's review of Eggs. They're delicious, but
Yeah.
I don't want to talk too much about them.
Yeah, it's just, and if you play it, you'll know what I mean. It's just a hard game to talk about without.
I hear there's a lot of, like, there's a lot going on in terms of the narrative that ties in directly with the gameplay. So it's a very hard thing to talk about without spoiling what's going on.
And
I had to kind of tiptoe around Stanley Parable a little bit.
Yes.
Like the experience of playing the game is the game.
Right.
So, like, to divulge any of the either mechanics or story really kind of breaks the experience for your first time visiting.
Right. Gone Home's the same way. Gone Home's one of those.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Gone Home. I get it, Ash.
Yeah. You talk about it, you know, it's like Fight Club. You just ruin everything.
No. Yeah. Those are great. Yeah, those are great examples. It's the same idea, is that to talk too much about those games would sort of spoil the experience for someone playing them for the first time.
Right.
And I feel like Inside definitely falls into that category. And I will just say for myself, sort of having, you know, played through the game in its entirety, you know, there was a point in the game for me where I was just like, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you know that you're like, I'm hooked on this game now. Like I understand what's going on, and it's cool. Yeah. So, I would, you know, highly recommend it. I think, you know, it's been getting high review scores. I feel like those are justified. If you were to line up all of these games that are sort of like in the similar genre, I think this one rises to the top, if not for any other reason than the execution of the idea being, you know, nearly flawless in terms of like providing a very polished experience that I think you would be hard pressed to find things that are wrong with it. And so I think that's why it's getting as high reviews as it is, just because it's a really fascinating game and the atmosphere is great. And it just sort of works, which is cool. I mean, it's hard to do that with these games nowadays because there's so many of them, and to sort of bring something to the table that presents, you know, like this kind of experience, I think is really, really impressive. So
awesome.
Well, that's Inside. It's, I think it's like $20 full retail. And I think that's worth it, to be honest with you.
Sweet.
Even though it's like a, you know, could be a shorter game than what you would
not
get.
Not always about the length, Scott.
Correct. Correct.
good old dick jokes. Yep. I think that's a dick
what?
Joke.
You think?
No, I'm just saying. No. Sometimes it's about the experience.
Yeah.
Let's talk about politics, guys.
Oh, good.
There's not enough of that in the world right now.
Yeah.
So CBS has a new show called Brain Dead. It's on, I think, Monday nights at 10 p.m., which is, I guess that's a bad time slot. I don't really know anymore. I don't really pay attention to the time slots because I kind of watch everything when I want to.
I'll tell you what, with summer TV, there are no rules to the content and time placement of shows. It's just like the Wild West.
I also think they push edgier shows. The 10 p.m. time slot is like preferred for a show that wants to do
edgy
weird
stuff.
Things.
Yeah, if you want to push limits, it's like summertime is when you do it.
Well, with Brain Dead, I'm going to not really spoil stuff. I mean, if you watch the trailer for it, I'm basically just going to spoil the trailer. But Brain Dead is following politics in Washington, and it's actually it exists in a weird hyper reality. So it is in a world where Trump and Hillary are running, except for all of the other characters are fake. So you have fake senators and fake party whips and all that stuff isn't real. So you don't have to really be paying attention to modern politics to enjoy the show. But it's about all the wheelings and dealings that are going on in Washington, D.C. and all like kind of the backroom deals and all the corruption. And then the show takes a total 360 super fucked up twist, and an asteroid crashes in a far off place, and on the asteroid are these bugs that burrow into your brain and change your personality. And these bugs start to infest various people inside Washington, D.C., and it makes kind of Republicans act a little bit more conservative, and it kind of changes the dynamics of D.C. And also, you don't really know what the end game is for the bugs, just that it's changing. It's changing people. It's changing people that are a little bit more liberal, a little bit more easygoing, and turning them into conservatives. And it's really crazy. And the neat thing about it is that it's hyper fucking gory. So
really,
these bugs, and like, so I'm watching the first episode and it's near the end, and I'll just go ahead and give it away, because there's a scene where, you know, this guy realizes that there's something in his head, and it always shows the bugs like crawling into the ears, which if you have a phobia of that is awful.
Yeah.
Are they worm like?
No, they're like giant fire ant looking things.
Okay, cool.
So these fire ant things go inside their ears, and then some people notice that they're in there. If you notice they're in there, you'll start to fight it. And if you start to fight the infestation, your head just explodes like Scanners style. And like totally like, what is his name? Chico from The Running Man. Like like just a gigantic head explosion, which as a fan of horror and gore and stuff, I absolutely loved. I feel like it's a fun show. It's really well acted. It's really smart. It's from the guys that created The Good Wife. So they really have a good feel of, you know, politics and all the inner workings of, you know, the Washington, D.C. scene. So if you like that kind of stuff, I would definitely watch it. I'm really intrigued to see where this goes, to see, you know, what happens with the whole plot with the bugs and all the different characters. But
I heard that they're like obsessed with a Cars song or something.
Yeah. So the bugs, for some reason, if they infest you, you will only listen to "You Might Think I'm Crazy" by the Cars.
Yeah, by the Cars.
And so people start to notice.
You might think I'm crazy. Hey,
so you'll start to hear that song. You hear that song like 20 times an episode, but it's always someone that's been infested that has that song playing.
That
so
is hilarious.
It is very, it's very The Faculty, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It has that kind of, you know, spooky, who is infested and who is not kind of vibe going on, which is just it's really fun for, you know, for a political drama to have that going on. Cause normally it's, you know, in some weird backwater town, but it's cool to see it, you know, also like They Live, you know, shows like that are, or in movies like that are great.
Seems like if you were a fan of, the short lived V revival with, Morena Baccarin and Elizabeth,
well, but this is like gonzo comedy on top of V, right?
Yeah.
Like it's weird.
It sounds like
it's dark humor, right?
Like, yeah, it's dark humor.
Oh, so that's awesome.
The characters themselves aren't like, you know, it's not, they don't realize that they are being funny, but it's so absurd, the things that are happening, that it becomes funny, you know?
That's awesome.
So it's, but it's good. I highly recommend it. They're only on episode three. Episode three just aired this week. So, you know, plenty of time to catch up. It's also available on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, all the episodes.
Is it on Prime?
Yeah. They're all streaming there, so you can catch up there.
Perfecto.
Also, or you can download the CBS app.
We talked about this on the last Ashless chat, but I'm in one of these episodes.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, this is the show. I'm stuck behind a door in one of these episodes.
Well, you have to watch it to find out what door you're hiding behind.
I know. For real.
Yeah.
When I find out, I'll be like, oh, my God. And the next episode, I'll be like, I'm in episode 7. Like, it'll be the greatest thing in the world.
Perf.
Nah, definitely fun. Check it out. I recommend.
Nice. Awesome.
Hi, this is Alan Tudyk, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast. Also known as the NAH. NerdAppropriate.com.
Our question of the week was dealing with all the sales that are going on right now. We asked you, what is in your game pile of shame? Because we all have them. And the first response is from Haggis McHaggis, who actually dropped by my live stream the other night. So thanks, man. Civilization 5, The Witcher 2 and 3, Borderlands 2, all the Uncharted, and Scott Pilgrim video game. I think I have... Well, I played a lot of Borderlands. The Uncharted are definitely in my pile of shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is sad.
Simon Schuler at Simon Schuler 6 says, Fallout 4, Firewatch, Dropsy, basically everything that isn't a giant treadmill labeled Destiny. Oh, geez.
Destiny fan.
Yeah.
Love the aware Destiny fan, though. That isn't a giant treadmill labeled Destiny. Robert Freemering says, with Steam and PS Plus, it's too much. Top ones are Tomb Raider, Dead Space, Hitman, Homefront 1, and Witcher 3.
Oh, man.
Witcher 3 is next to play, he says, which is like, what is it, like a 200-hour life investment?
Yeah, which means he's not hitting the other ones until November.
Yeah. You should definitely just play Dead Space first, because that game is quality.
It is. Bell Needs a Nap, at Desert Bell, says, Shakes Link to all of my Steam games. Yes, Bears. All of them. Oh, it's not shakes. It says shakes.
Shake her link.
Shake a link. Can we make that a thing?
Can we create new lingo?
Hey, shake a link all over to nerdappropriate.com.
We'll make a little web app that shakes links at you when you want to share them to people.
Awesome. It's the next great idea.
It is.
Chris Jenkins.
Redneck trademarked.
There you go. Chris Jenkins at Cloglip says, Witcher 3, Salt and Sanctuary. Until Dawn, Alien Isolation, and about 40 PS3 and 360 games, sad face.
Until Dawn, so good, man. Definitely play Until Dawn.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Salt and Sanctuary. That had a big presence at PAX 1 year.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a 2D Dark Souls is what I've heard it described as. I played a little bit. It was fun. How about, Scott, do you have a game? Oh,
what?
Me?
Oh, you're doing it? What? Oh. Same time. Ready? One, two, three.
Oh, go. Okay. I have a couple that I'm, okay. There's one in particular that I feel pretty bad about, just because I talked about how much I liked it, which was, Dying Light. Dying Light is the,
I didn't beat it.
I didn't play enough of it, but it's sort of like a zombie Mirror's Edge, from a developer called Techland. And first of all, their Twitter account is awesome. If you don't follow them, they're just funny, even if you don't like the game. And
they warring with somebody at one point, like making jokes back and forth with them.
Yeah, they
group.
Were like, they like fake troll other game accounts. And oh, that's right. They did something with, I can't remember who they were making fun of, but they were doing like drink for DLC.
For some
reason, there was like, I think another game was running some promotion where you had to like retweet or something for DLC, and they basically trolled them and they did a drink for DLC campaign. Oh, maybe there was a, maybe it had something to do with Destiny and like Monster Energy drink or something. And they were like, hey, just post a photo of you drinking water. And if enough of you do it, we'll just release free deal. We'll make new DLC and release it for free. And
I remember
they,
that.
And
yeah,
then they did that. Yeah. And that game, they added like a huge expansion recently. And a bunch of like, they continue to add, it's one of those games that just continues to be supported. And you're like, that's amazing. Like there's more, it's like The Witcher 3 where they released, you know, 30 pieces of free DLC. It's the same idea. That's probably the one I feel worst about. But then I also have, you know, Alien Isolation, Shadows of Mordor, like some really big games, Witcher 3, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then all the Steam games, unfortunately, but that's what it is. So yeah.
Yeah. Jeff at Mass Effect Forever said Dragon Age 2 and The Witcher 2, bought them when they came out, got past the tutorial and haven't played either since. I fall into that gap quite a bit where you play the intro and you're like, this game is fun, and then like something distracts you and then you never go back to them.
Oh, like you get through that first like 15 minutes, what they call a quote finger quote 15 minutes, and they're like, welcome to the world, and you're like, all right, off.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Axe Staffer, Alexi Staffer says, he gives a link to his full list of shame.
Oh my God.
And it is pretty vast. There's a website called backloggery.com, which I guess you can list all of your stuff. And I'm just going to name a couple of his Xbox 360s that are unforgivable. Gears of War 3, never beat that.
Wow.
Darksiders, never beat that. Red Dead Redemption, never beat that. So, oh my gosh.
Man.
Oh my gosh. And then his most ashamed of, he links these specially. He says, Deus Ex, Zombie U, Pikmin 3, Red Dead Redemption, Alien Isolation, and Far Cry.
So. You know, I think with Alien Isolation, there was a point at which, I know on Xbox One, for example, that full game, I think, went on sale for like $10 one week.
Right.
And I think
it's supposed to be great.
Yeah. And I think everybody bought it and everybody's still waiting to play it.
Well, it came out in a very crowded release window. I remember that. It was just like everything was coming out right around that game and it just kind of got swallowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Elizabeth says, I'm a few hours into The Witcher, Shadowrun Returns, and Life is Strange, but I keep getting distracted. Hangs head in shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Ash? You got any?
I'm, unfortunately, I haven't finished like a lot of the Telltale stuff, and I love their stuff. So mine is, I haven't finished Tales of the Borderlands. I haven't finished Game of Thrones. I haven't finished Wolf Among Us.
Oh, man.
All of those I'm about like halfway through. So it's kind of, especially like I'm a huge Borderlands fan. And I don't know why I haven't finished Tales of the Borderlands. I guess it's hard when it's episodic and you have to kind of remember.
Yeah.
like, oh man, where was I? And I'm like, oh, well, like I'm playing something else now. So I guess that's the shame of, you know, episodic games. But those are my big ones right now. And, trying to think of if I think of anything else that pops up, I'll chime in.
Justin Banks at Sir Kingsman says Watch Dogs, Dead Rising 3, and Dragon Age Inquisition.
Dusty Tulip says where to even begin. Borderlands the pre-sequel, that's also in my pile of shame, by the way. Tropico 5, Life is Strange, the last two episodes, Grim Fandango, Super Exploding Zoo. And she says, and no, I'm not replaying Mass Effect Trilogy yet again instead of playing these awesome games, I promise. And she says, I am.
Oh man, you know how I stopped playing the Mass Effect trilogy is that I just 100%ed all the games with the achievements, and I was like, I can stop now.
Yeah.
And I think the only labor intensive part of that is that you have to play the first game somewhere between 3 and 6 times to.
Yeah, I remember you doing that, and I was like, I'll never be able to do that.
I was a pro though. By the time by the time you get through that fifth playthrough,
doing speed runs and shit.
Oh yeah, absolutely, it's crazy. Yeah. Let's see. Ness Ryder at Paper by the Ton says, "Gone home. It keeps creeping me out." And I told her, just like I'm going to tell you, Matt, that you have to play it. It's like Inside. It's one of those games where it's like,
I know.
You just play it. You just kind of do it. It doesn't take a long time, but you have to
do it. Well, guess what, Scott? It's on my list, too.
Oh, so what's on your list?
Gone Home.
That's it? Just Gone Home?
I used to have an easy excuse because my PC was junk and I couldn't play any of these games, mm-hmm. but I no longer have that excuse, so I've got all the BioShocks. I've got Gone Home.
You have to play all of them? You didn't finish the first one?
Which one's BioShock?
Yeah.
I never played BioShock 1, ever.
Wow. That's crazy, dude.
I listened to all you fools play it.
You have those on PC?
I've got them on Steam, yeah.
Oh, on Steam? You might as well just wait, because I heard that if you own those, they're going to release a remastered version. You might get that update for free.
Who knows?
Yeah, so might as well just wait on those.
But yeah, Gone Home, The Witchers, and then probably my bigger ones, though. Like, Gone Home is pretty high on the list. It's something I want to play at some point. But my bigger ones are probably the Metal Gears.
Oh, yeah.
For me, and Borderlands 2.
Is there like
guys
one?
All in... got way better than me before I could join in on the fun, and then soloing that game is brutal. It's like
it's very hard.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me tell you something. I am one achievement short of 100%ing that game, and the only reason I didn't get it is because I corrupted my save file when I was trying to.
Yeah. That's so brutal.
Yeah, and so that one is sitting. Like I basically have to, and it's an easy one, but you have to play through enough of the game to get there. It's the achievement related to the Gunzerker for like doing it for 10 seconds.
Oh geez.
And so I'm like, it's like, I know exactly what it is. 68 of 69 achievements, and I have to Gunzerk for 10 seconds. So if you ever sit down and play that game, I will get that last achievement and help you finish.
All right.
Gunzerk all over the place. Gunzerk all over your keyboard.
Can you play though? Because I got it through Games of Gold. I'm gonna play it on the one. Can we?
It's not backwards compatible yet, is it?
It is. Yeah.
Borderlands 2 is.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, that's easy enough. I'll just start up a new save because I need to start from scratch anyways.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. Fine then.
So take that.
I think the last one is from Cliffy Joel. He says, there aren't enough characters for me to list the 100+ games on my Steam account that I have not played.
See? There you go.
We feel your pain.
100 games.
Yeah.
Yes. It's hard because you buy them, you get so excited, and you're like, wait, how do I manufacture time?
Yeah. You just don't.
Work.
I kind of want to have a Surface just so I have like a tablet that can run Steam that I could just have, you know, with me at random times, but I don't even know when I'd play it anyway. I don't know if that'd solve my problem, but it's
probably
a start. No, probably
you
wouldn't.
Try though.
Yeah, I could try.
Let's end this beast.
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
What do you say? Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 238 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter, and that's at nerdappropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Scott, or Ash at nerdappropriate.com, or you can send us a general email at nerds@nerdappropriate.com. We have a Twitch TV channel, and that is twitch.tv/nerdappropriate. And like I say every week, I'm hoping to do it more, but we'll see what happens.
Your schedule is 12 noon, 3 a.m.
Yeah, it's kind of weird right now. But 1 a.m. there are the next some archive day. Stuff if you want to check out me getting my ass kicked.
Oh, nice.
Playing some Overwatch. I have like, I think, 5 or 6 Overwatch videos up there now, and some other links and fun stuff up on our Twitch TV channel. So definitely follow us there, and go to our Facebook channel, which is /nerdappropriate on Facebook, and YouTube, same thing, /nerdappropriate. Basically, we're everywhere. And thank you guys so much for everything, and you're awesome. And we will see you next week with an all new show.
Sounds great.
Sounds good. Yeah, it won't work. Weird.
That's weird. You don't need a mouse to record, right?
I mean, how am I supposed to surf other websites while you guys are talking about whatever boring shit you're talking about?
That's the whole show.
Oh, busted.